Welcome to Debatable, a television show that relies on promotion that only occasionally arrives as has been demanded.
I wonder if it actually works, but that's a whole nother question. Well, more importantly, did the Crimson win? I mean, my Terps started off their football season with a dub. I don't know if your alma mater.
Oh yeah, hold on.
You have to look it up.
Let me look it up because oh yeah, okay. So here's the good news for my own credibility. The reason I did know the answer to that question is because Harvard football has absolutely not played a game yet.
Oh, football! I was talking about debate.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm coaching the team next weekend too. Yeah.
A guest celebrity coach?
Absolutely. Speaking of a guest celebrity, guess who we have today?
Who do we have?
Nobody else. It's just the two of us. And Alabaster, sorry, apologies. Yeah. Alabaster, hello. You are also here.
That's right. I'm here. Thank you. I feel very appreciated. And what is not he like an afterthought at all.
What is he in the restaurant analogy, since we have a menu? Is he a hostess, a maitre d', a server, manager?
He's the waiter who keeps on coming over asking if we need something, even though he knows by our body language we absolutely don't.
Oh gosh. Well,
it's like, yeah, played. We know. Yeah, we said tap like 15 minutes ago. Stop asking us.
Honestly, that was a lot nicer than how I would describe myself. I was going to call myself the busboy that's just like cleaning up the dirty dishes that you leave on the table and walk out.
That's good too. I like that also.
Yeah, you do earn your supper, Alabaster. So where do you want us to start?
Let's start with some tennis. And the story coming out of the U.S. Open yesterday is young American Francis Tiafoe's victory over Rafael Nadal.
Big foe?
Yep. And what does that mean for American men's tennis?
So big foe, thing or a thing you just invented?
No, it's a thing.
Great.
At least according to Coco Gauff, it's a thing because she tweeted it. So since Tiafoe is a turtle like your boy, I am going to pretend I've been in on Big Foe from the beginning. I love Francis. He's the man. What Bradley Beal was at the game. LeBron tweeted about Big Foe.
Okay, yeah. Dominic, we're doing the thing where we reference other celebrities to prove how big this celebrity is, and it's unconvincing every single time.
It's like WNBA
syndrome, where it's like, look at all the NBA players courtside, and it's like, but we're not talking about the actual web.
I'm here for the fundamentals of tennis. Actually, I'm not here for the fundamentals of tennis because I did watch, shamefully, I watched more of the Kyrgios match than I did of Big Foe, and Kyrgios be doing some weird stuff on the court, and I love it. I don't think I've ever seen a fake drop shot before. I love it. Okay. But anyway, Big Foe.
I love a fake drop shot. I love a fake conversation about Francis Tiafoe. Yeah. That's actually now about Nick Kyrgios.
Big Foe? I'm just going to keep saying Big Foe to make up for the fact that I don't know much other than he was winning. He was awesome. He's a Terp. He cried afterwards. It was emotional. I loved every second of that. As I get older, like I might dive into this more later on, but just
you're getting like watching a movie on an airplane vibes when you watch sports now.
Nah, see, no.
It's just a little bit easier to cry.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to cry. Movies don't make me cry. It's not real. Big photo. That's real.
So I did not cry,
but I mean,
Alabaster put down a card that should make the entire institution of American tennis cry, and we ignored it for that entire time. But this stat, Dominique, this is why this means something. Okay, American men born after 1989 were 0-30 against Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic in Grand Slams until Big Foe.
So
until that happened, this was a desert that was utterly barren in ways that are embarrassing. So we can talk about
Big Foe.
Francis that big picture idea is staggering.
Well, Big Foe is a beautiful black drop of liquid in this horrible American desert, and I freaking love it. And what I love more is how Alabaster, who is a noted tennis junkie, I think your dad was great at tennis. Your brother like played college tennis.
Of course they were.
Which is the same as talking about how LeBron tweeted Big Foe to give Foe his credentials. We talk about how Alabaster's family is really into tennis to give him credentials. But I bet he is sick right now because he has to listen to us yell ramblings about Big Foe while he has real tennis analysis.
If well, like, are we talking about oil? Is that the metaphor you just tried to drop there before?
I want
to like,
pass along a little bit of information that makes Francis Tiafoe so special, and I think the viewers will
Big Foe?
Big Foe, his nickname. You know, he's from College Park, Maryland. He is from a family.
Sierra Leone, right?
Yeah, from Sierra Leone. And his father helped build, as a construction worker, the JTCC, a massive tennis center in College Park. He worked so hard, he stayed on in a custodial role where Francis lived in the tennis center and took hand-me-down stuff and basically self-taught a lot of his strokes and worked this amazing place.
So
he's like the American dream of tennis.
Yeah.
But he's like the American dream of tennis. This is not like a, you know, the traditional thing of a spoiled country club kid. Francis Tiafoe like grinded at this program and became one, the best American junior in a generation. He was number two in the world. He won high level junior events at age 16 that Americans had never won before. And that's part of what makes his career so interesting is that he turned pro with expectations of being the next great American tennis player at age 17. Yes. And a lot of that has taken longer than we thought. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Tennis is really hard. There were three Michael Jordans at the top of the sport, like we talked about there with Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. But also, you know, the weight of expectations, we expected these guys to be stars by the time they're 20. It took him till he's 24, but this is the biggest victory for American tennis since Andy Roddick won his Grand Slam 21 years ago.
No, and the reasons why, I mean, we can get to, actually, let's leave the reasons why American tennis, Alabaster, has been so barren till a little bit later, because I feel like you're going to have a lot of thoughts about that. I want to space out the Alabaster outbursts.
Yeah,
but right now, Dominique, it is like just visually very satisfying, even though Nadal is older, right? Like Nadal this year was undefeated at Grand Slams. He won the Australian Open. He won the French Open, only withdrew from Wimbledon because he was hurt, because he tore that abdominal muscle. So like when Nadal is in this, yes, he had won 27 straight matches against Americans specific. Wait a minute. We need to talk about this. Like, what a stat. Like, we used to call Manny Pacquiao the Mexicutioner because he would defeat all of these Mexican boxers.
Oh,
Nadal
man,
is a
That doesn't
single,
seem problematic.
It is very problematic, but also definitely a compliment. Nadal, absolutely a single one-man band, just revolution. Yeah.
Americutioner?
Americutioner.
That doesn't quite hit the same. But so I know that Alabaster at some point wants us to project forward and talk about how this is all great for the future of American men's tennis. And I've come to really appreciate tennis through Serena more than anyone else. And so tennis is a game that is exclusive in many ways for people. It's probably part of the reason why there aren't a lot of great American male tennis players. But it's a really simple game and a fun game to watch, where even if you don't understand the intricacies or the geometry of the court, you can turn it on. When it's a big match, it's one of those things, like boxing in a way. Football's not like that, where there are some games that you can't just like out of nowhere parachute in and appreciate. Football is one of those games. But tennis, if a Big Foe turns into some great American champion with that story behind him, that rags to riches American dream farce that only seems to happen every once in a while. If we can all latch on to that, then that'd be great and fun, and maybe it'll turn into that. But for now, let's just enjoy the tears of Big Foe with people doing speedy air guitars in the stands. It was just, it was a moment.
But there was, speaking of like speediness, this thing,
the windmill, I don't know.
Exactly, the white man air guitar windmill move, a real power move. The idea
is Larry Bird. That's why I think of it
really
as a white
going
move.
Back to Bird with that? Yeah, I guess
Larry
Bird did do that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, I see that more than I see any Larry Bird highlight is Larry Bird doing the towel spin. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh yeah, that's right. Just like snapping someone's buttock in a locker room. The idea of speediness though, Nadal said this after the match, Alabaster, where Nadal was asked like, well, what happened, dude? Like, you had been undefeated against Americans. You had not lost against anybody in Grand Slam matches this year. And he said, like, that guy is younger and faster than me. Like, tennis, Dominic, you mentioned how football and tennis have all of these differences in the analysis. And you're right. Like, I don't know of if anyone's become like the Dan Orlovsky or like the, you know, like the, like who's the guy explaining really complicated stuff. I don't know if that person exists.
Yeah, tennis, I don't think so.
Is simple to understand on the level though of like movement really is such an advantage. And when we talk about the big picture as to why American men have not been close to competitive at the highest levels of tennis for decades now, it does feel like you need guys who can move. You need guys who can play on different surfaces, certainly. There are arguments, Alabaster, that I'm curious to hear your opinions about. But the fact that this dude is a mover. I don't know. What's the word in tennis for somebody who actually can, like, you know, I'm going to sound like an idiot describing what he does, but he moves real fast and gets to all these balls.
He's explosive. The word I think you're looking for is an athlete. He's a great athlete. In tennis, I think it looks easy. Cause I also am pretty explosive athletically, thought I could go play tennis cause I can get to every ball. And all I end up doing when I play against people who are good at tennis is getting a hell of a workout cause I can get to all the balls, but hitting a winner is like about angle and arm speed and geometry, all these things that I think take time and also take some natural ability. It's sad that we don't have the infrastructure in the country to, because there are plenty of guys who weren't good enough to play cornerback in the NFL who are explosive.
I love this pipeline that you're imagining.
Athletically enough to find something else. Like, I think it's a real thing is that I think the assumption we make is that people make it as far as they can and we discount how, or make it as far as they deserve and we discount how much chance has to do with it. But like, I don't know. I made it to the NFL in part because I'm a good athlete, but also in part because of timing and circumstances and whatever, all the other things that go into it. They were looking for fast DBs, not big ones. And then as I'm leaving the league, everyone's looking for big DBs. Like it changes. So I think that matters also in tennis, except it goes down to a more like granular level there, where it's just like, we got tennis courts, but we don't keep them and people don't have rackets.
Have people, Alabaster, as the resident tennis nerd here, has there been a person who like tries to go to these failed cornerbacks and tells them
It's too late. You got to get to them before
they're failed. You didn't have hands, but try to hold this racket.
Well, you got to get to them before they're failed cornerbacks.
The problem is that like tennis requires a lot more hand-eye coordination than playing cornerback. So someone who fails coordination-wise at that level is going to fail. Like it's a unique sport. You have to have incredibly precise hand eye along with being an explosive athlete.
Baseball players. I don't know. Like the point isn't about being a cornerback.
There's, like the movement in tennis is, you know, pretty analogous to basketball in a lot of ways.
Okay. Well, failed basketball players. The point I'm making is not about where you would find these tennis athletes. It's that there probably are a lot of people who failed at other sports who would have succeeded in tennis if the walls were not there. And it's interesting that we have so many successful football players because it's expensive to play football. But when I was coming up, we had the infrastructure where you just shared equipment and you passed it down. I never had to buy a helmet or shoulder pads because we already had it there. It's something that we don't prioritize here, which feels like a really boring conversation. I'm sorry that I dragged us into it.
No. It's there is one interesting big part about this, and it's like, you know, it's not just an athleticism thing. It's a being technically sound thing. And it's like, the thing is you can get a tennis racket and tennis balls and play tennis cheaply, but to get to this like incredibly high level, it requires coaching at this incredibly young age. And America has a lot of great tennis academies in Florida, Southern California, this one in College Park, Maryland. But ironically, it's also producing some of the best European players who come to these academies in the US to play there. So it's like, It's not just getting the right American athletes to do it. It's also technique. And this is like, before I bore the viewers to death, American players just serve and hit big forehands. And that's what's interesting about Tiafoe is he's not like a traditional American player. But you look at players from Spain and the rest of Europe who are, as you alluded to earlier, Pablo, all court players. And that has separated Americans from the top of tennis over the last 20 years. And then the third part is, I think we need to give a little bit of credit to how special this era of tennis was. Having three guys like Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic their gap was so enormous. It really disallowed everyone from winning. It's like if there had been three Serena Williamses, there wouldn't have been breakthroughs. There, because, you know, you'd have to beat two of them to win a tournament. And that's what every other man and American man has faced over the last 20 years. So it'll be interesting to see if people adjust and there's an era of, like, correction. We need to be good enough to beat these all-court guys from Europe.
Right.
So does it feel, though, like we have the last question I have, Dominique and Alabaster here, is, like, does it feel like this is a turning point, or does this feel like a great story, right? Because the other way to inspire people to come into this pipeline is to have a transcendent star that you look like.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think
this
you can.
Who this could be in theory, if it's not too late at, you know, age 24.
You can look at the women's tennis. American women's tennis, and it's clear that there were a couple of role models that influenced a lot of the best women in tennis in American tennis right now. I don't know that Coco being among them, and Sloan, and I mean, I guess Osaka too, even though she's Japanese, had a lot of American influence. So, I mean, it could be the case, but like, I feel bad. We've celebrated Francis Tiafoe, and I think we have not celebrated him enough, and we're going to move on anyway. However, I would feel even worse if we then put this pressure on him. It's like, you got to keep doing this. Like, can we enjoy this moment a little bit? And we'll get excited for the next Grand Slam, and hopefully, well, he's still in this one. Maybe he'll win this one. And hopefully he can play well in the next ones, and then we can talk about all this other stuff. But I don't know.
So what you're saying is
could be the Tiger Woods effect. We thought we were going to get a lot of black golfers.
Exactly.
Zero after Tiger.
But what you're saying at the end here is that we should be treating Big Foe more like a big friend.
Yeah. And for the record, this is also, there are a lot of young, good American tennis players. There are several in the top 50 and even more in the top 100. The most there have been in a long time. So
yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, though. I'll believe it when they get here.
I don't know.
Sorry, not to turn
50.
Into Mad Dog Russo, but like... No. I've been hearing rumors of all of these prospects, and here's one who finally does the thing. So I'll believe that when I see it.
I don't care about no top 50s. Give me some grand slams. That's the only time I turn it on. I ain't watching these top 50s. I want to see the quarters and the finals. That's what I'm about. That's the type of tennis fan I am.
Pablo, to your point also, I will say it's interesting that you talk about inspiring next generations. That's actually what's happening in Spain right now. The most fun part of any sport is prodigy on the rise before you put too much pressure on them. Carlos Alcaraz is a 19-year-old Spanish player who's also in the quarterfinals and is sort of an amalgamation of Nadal and Federer and a sinewy ball of fast switch muscle that you don't normally get to see in tennis. And that's what we need in America. Mm. We need a generation inspired by these great players to follow.
I got to commend you on your quick Googling and reading about this person and presenting it as if you've been following them. What's next?
I'll send you some clips.
I hope it's more sinewy balls. I hope that's what's next.
Sort of. All right. Question. After losing to FSU, do you have less faith in Brian Kelly turning LSU around?
So I have no interest, Dominique, in playing the long game on this topic. Like, I know this is a 10-year project, et cetera, with Brian Kelly. But I want to talk about just how, like, he has these electorates as head coach at LSU. And every one of those electorates seems to have, I think understandably, questions about whether this is the right guy to have elected.
Yeah. So, I mean... I think they would argue that they did not elect him, and they would be right, which is probably why they are opposed to him. Like, we can go through the Brian Kelly resume at LSU right now. It's a fake accent at halftime basketball game when he said
first impression.
Yeah.
Finally.
Then it's the like 360 camera where he is doing John Travolta dances.
Yes. Right? Most generously, Pulp Fiction homage. Yeah.
I guess, and he did not
get
that.
By the way, while
recruit.
Like grinding on the back of a player, which is the true, like, just what, why is any of this happening?
Then we had, and I like to break up this game into a couple different parts because this stood out to me. The halftime, when he came out of halftime, they put a microphone in front of him and he said, "We can't play any worse."
Actually, I don't know. Maybe we can. This is only my first game. And then they blew a game that they were, I'm sure, favored in to a team that is rebuilding, I think, is to be kind. Florida State is not the Florida State of old. So that is the complete Brian Kelly resume. How can anyone have any confidence after anything like that? And LSU rebuild, or I don't know what word you used, like change the direction. Like LSU was down recently, but
yes,
they are not
500.
Yeah, but they are not bottom of the barrel. Like, they got all Americans on that team. So, I don't know. The turnaround is winning SEC championships. It's not being able to beat Florida State. Like, that should have been easy.
No, but it does feel like repeatedly Ryan Kelly is given these opportunities to make a first impression. And at every turn, he face plants. And so when Alabaster puts down this card that details the special teams aspect of all of this, Dominique, I mean, look, the final 2 minutes and 15 seconds of this game, as LSU is down 7. They go muff punt, then FSU fumbles on the goal line, LSU drives 99 yards and scores as time expires, and then FSU blocks an extra point, which was the second kick they had blocked in that game because they blocked a field goal earlier. And this is one of those things where, as a coach, you talk about the press conferences. The press conference also after the game was not great. It wasn't as embarrassingly viral as the other stuff, but it wasn't great. And it wasn't great because I feel like there's a question as a head coach when something happens, when so much incompetence happens on the field that obviously you personally did not cause, right? Like, you didn't muff those punts. That kid did twice. Sure. You didn't have that kick blocked yourself. Your players did. But there's a point at which so much is happening that's bad on the team that you coach that you have to figure out in your own mind, like, when do I blame them? And when do I blame myself?
So the muff punts, I will not put that on Brian Kelly. Like, that's not a practice thing. I don't think. I assume the kid practices catching punts. It's not a discipline thing. That's a nerve thing. Maybe they put too much pressure on him or something. Or maybe he's not. Maybe he's never caught a punt before. I would doubt that. But I
felt bad for him after number two, to be clear.
The blocked extra points and field goals, that's coaching. Like, those are not supposed
explain
to get
that.
Blocked.
Explain that.
Well, I mean, it's you practice these several times a week. It's about timing, getting it off in time, getting it at the right height. It's about taking away the inside gap when everyone else forcing them to go around the long way. They didn't either. Like, it took them longer than they should have to get it off. Their trajectory was not high, and somebody lost on their inside gap. Like, that to me is coaching, at least on the final extra point. So, like, that's on them. So I don't know how – and the game shouldn't have been that close. And another thing to throw on their resume is I learned this weekend that they lost, I think, a cornerback to Alabama. Like, you can't have your players, your good players, transferring out. Like, this is all on the Brian Kelly resume. And the worst part of the game for me was when I think I was informed that the band director at LSU is from Jackson State. So they have modernized and urbanized some of their music selection. So I heard them playing the classic Hood Rich song, Stay Fly. And then I realized that it's perfect for them because they have All-American receivers, yet they cannot get off a field goal. Like, it seems like they have focused on the wrong things. Let's get the rent paid. Let's get some gas in that tank before you start buying Gator boots and pimped out Gucci suits, Brian Kelly.
But to the point of those receivers, right? Like, after the game, this is never a good symptom when you develop it in 2022 where your receivers, including your star receiver, Kayshon Booty, great name. But Malik Nabers, guy muffed those two punts, and Kyron Lacy, they all have to, like, go dark on social media, wiping their accounts of anything related to LSU.
They don't have to.
Well, not because they were definitely going to, like, enter the transfer portal, but because they were just getting shelled by negative feedback and comments, which is what happens after, a first game when LSU loses to FSU, which then declares that FSU is back on the strength of that victory.
Yeah, that, I don't know. FSU fans need to temper their expectations because we may be finding out that this LSU team is not as good, even though they're talented. They're not as good as they would think. I think Brian Kelly
would like a little bit more latitude, but I think no one's expecting you to beat Alabama, but you can't lose to an out-of-conference ACC opponent that is not Clemson. Like, it just, it can't happen with the way that they recruit, the talent that they have there, the essentially a home game in New Orleans at the Superdome. Like, these are all, and it was like close. You didn't deserve, it was closer than it should have been. You didn't deserve it to be that close. You got really just beaten. You just got terribly beaten in that game. And I don't know. I'm not an LSU fan, but I can feel their frustration and embarrassment and their regret, frankly, for Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, Jimbo Fisher hadn't had, or the program left behind FSU, they haven't had a winning season since Jimbo left. And so this felt, this felt like a would-be cupcake. Instead, what ends up being is poison.
Where's Coach O? So, what do you think Coach O is doing?
I want to, I mean, I know he's a problematic figure. Still want to, I want to hear from him. I don't need to see him. I just want to hear from him on this stuff.
I feel like he's got to come out and say something in that gravelly voice right now. And
he's going to
make the fans long.
He's going to be on like a Twitter Spaces after the second week of the season. But to the point earlier about the electorates, Alabaster, right? Like, so the players are feeling shaky about Brian Kelly, presumably, right? This is not a great way for their relationship to get off. You have the alumni who are furious that they just lost to FSU. And then you have all of us who obviously are here to just laugh at a guy, Brian Kelly, who seems uncomfortable in his own skin. I was trying to figure out, like, what distinguishes Brian Kelly that makes him such a character that I'm looking forward to watching and laughing at and rooting against. And it's because he is this mixture of guy who is actually good at coaching football. Like, his resume at Notre Dame, like, he is a more than good coach. But there is always this ceiling where he could not beat Alabama and Notre Dame. He could not beat the top Ohio State, right? So what happens is that he goes to LSU, where he finally gets the players, which would enable him to do that. And instead, he finds out that maybe this is a Sisyphus situation where he's trying to roll this giant boulder up a hill. And instead, the boulder just keeps crushing him. While simultaneously, he is trying to figure out, how much honesty do I give people about how much I resent my own players right now? Which is
Notre
a delicious
Dame.
Recipe in college.
Notre Dame has to be the happiest team after a loss in all of college football. They got to watch Brian Kelly.
They
lose,
covered. And they only lost by 11 to
OSU. And they were competitive in a game that they lose by 100 points every year. Not just to Ohio State. I mean, to Alabama, to Georgia, to any big-time opponent.
Yep.
They competed in that game in their first time, in their first game since Brian Kelly. They have to be in heaven. I don't know if there are no moral victories, but I think they got some in South Bend right now. Moral victory.
Another ingredient is that the special teams coordinator, who's also the recruiting coordinator apparently at LSU, was the guy who had that job at Notre Dame. And that guy happens to be Brian Polian, whose last name you might recall because he is Bill Polian's son. And so the idea that they lost those two guys, now obviously feels like a win, Alabaster. Like, that, I do think Notre Dame in the moral victory ranking right now, they might be number one in the country.
When we would sometimes, when in the NFL, when the coaches were happy, they give us Victory Monday, which, like, you win a game on Sunday, a big game, and so you get Monday off. You think they got Moral Victory Monday for Notre Dame? I feel like they deserve a Moral Victory Monday where they don't have to come in.
I know. I believe it was Kanye who said that moral victories are for minor league coaches. But in this case, that feels appropriate. Like, college football should absolutely, by that very standard,
should be a minor
have
league.
Moral Victory Monday.
Can I ask one more question about Brian Kelly?
We should have that, too. Wait, what did you say?
We should. One more question about what we did. Well, I mean, Labor Day, we had Monday off.
That's true. The American worker got a moral victory Monday. I've been taking a lot of L's, but
so
guess
sad.
What? Moral
so
victory
sad.
Monday.
Baton Rouge. I've never been to Baton Rouge. I get the sense, though, that Baton Rouge is very invested in LSU football. And that's one of the things that sucks about being a college coach. Is he can't go nowhere.
No, you are the mayor. Like, you are the governor of the mayor.
Nowhere.
Like,
People, I mean, like, the governor and mayor, no one cares as much about the things that the governor and mayor are doing.
That's true.
You know, like on a daily basis or weekly basis, you step out there and you do something that will impact the way people treat you for the rest of the week. He is all DoorDash right now.
Man, I love the idea, though, because you mentioned Coach O before. Coach O is famous for going viral because he's like jogging sweatily, shirtless through town, even as like the team is struggling, because he has built that kind of town gown dynamic. Yeah. I do want Brian Kelly to just increasingly try to like talented Mr. Ripley at Orgeron. Just like lean all the way in, man. Yeah, gotcha. You already started with his weird accent. Like just try to do the things that made him so popular and fail at every single possible turn.
All right, what you got?
All right, next topic. We get the
all right, guys. We're gonna just do one more. We're gonna skip Serena, who is already waffling about retirement, which could be fun to watch. But we're gonna go.
She's
to Tom
gonna be
Brady.
A boxer for the rest of her life, by the way. Just like, yeah, popping up. Gonna be sad, but nonetheless, we'll watch. Yep.
Okay. What are the chances Tom Brady showing his O line every time an analyst says they suck and can't do anything is going to make them better? We have a clip.
I've showed it to him and used it as motivation. Every time someone says they suck and they can't do anything, I try to show it to him and say, this is what they're all saying about you. What do you guys think? What are you going to do about it?
Man. Dominique, I feel like the way to answer this question, of course, is to delve into our own personal psychologies. So I know if I were to try and motivate you, like I've learned this, like I need to figure out when I cannot convince you that you are better than you are, and to address you on the level that will make me seem least like a liar. Right?
See, that's, you could have just saved all of those words. Just be honest. That's it. Just be honest. And I think Tom Brady is making a mistake assuming that everyone is built like him, or everyone is built in a way that they are fueled by that. So I give it 50-50, because maybe half of them will be motivated by this. Another half of them could be discouraged by this. Like, so many coaches are like, don't look at your mentions, stay off of social media, don't read all this, because they don't know what that input is going to do to you, you know, whether it's positive or negative. Tom Brady is assuming that this input is going to help all of these guys. Yes. I'm not sure it will. It suggests to me that they are not already motivated, or that protecting the greatest quarterback of all time is not enough to get them going. That somehow the fact that I or some other analyst are like, hey, they stink. So I'm like, oh, well, in that case, I'm going to practice harder.
But the honesty thing, Dominique, because your point is well taken, right? Be honest is a good two-word summary of all of my jabbering. But at the same time, like, there's a difference between being honest about my thoughts about you and then being honest and bringing to you all of everyone else's thoughts, right? Like, that's the distinction. Right. Like, why are you bringing me everyone else's unvarnished, very blunt thoughts here? Because to me, like, what I'm worried about, because the Bucks O-line is disastrous, right? This is the story here. Ryan Jensen injured. That other dude, Aaron Stinnick?
Stinney,
sorry, we're now like, this is where I feel like I'm 45. I'm like, I have to figure out the name of this Bucks O-lineman in tiny text. But that guy,
of the two screen, is that we get a smaller alabaster box, and I can't read any of those names.
That's right. But the point is, one guy left for the Bengals, Ali Marpet, who was excellent, retired. And so what they're left with is a bunch of guys who clearly are the weak link on this team. And so, motivationally speaking, Dominique, like, I don't know if honesty is the best policy, because I feel like the most upside here is to try and just make them feel like they have something in them that they actually don't have.
Okay, so honesty is always the best policy, and you do not have to do a complete brain dump. Like, if somebody has on a shirt that you don't like, you don't need to go up volunteer the opinion that you don't like their shirt. So if one of these linemen is just walking through the hallway, you don't need to go over and say, hey, you suck. Like, I feel like being honest with them about what they need to work on and how they can get better at it.
Hey, you suck, helpful. Says Bucks fan 941.
Oh, yeah. And so that to me, it is in direct conflict with one of the big myths around a lot of big time athletes is I don't care what people say about me.
Right.
If you don't care what people say about you, why are you gathering up all these clips? Like, you obviously care what people say about you. And if you are trying to build an athlete who does not care what people say about them, you probably should not gather up these clips as if they have some value and lay them in front of them. My response, if I were Tom Brady, which I'm not, would be, who cares? Like, I don't need to say this on a podcast. If people are asking me about my O-line, wait a minute. We ain't played a game yet. You watch. That's it. And if you want to criticize us after we play poorly, my response will be, we are going to work on that and we are going to get better. I trust my guys. Not showing them a bunch of garbage that from people that they presumably don't respect.
Well, speaking of garbage from someone we don't respect, Alabaster has a thought.
No, I respect you.
That's right. I would just like to note as we close the show about athletes who claim to not care about what other people think. Kevin Durant is on Twitter right now just frying trolls. And his most recent tweet made me laugh. He quote tweeted someone about this and said, I'm peacefully tweeting as I stab my plate full of scrambled eggs. And I just think that's the perfect athlete experience.
I love that,
man.
Kevin Durant is the best.
So I guess I'll go 0%.
Yeah.
Because they're not good and it's not going to help.
Yeah, that is very interesting. The idea that you think that if someone who's been playing football their whole life is as good as they can be at football, presumably, is not quite as good as they can be because they have not read enough negative clips about themselves.
But this is a version of bootstraps theory, Dominique. It worked for him. It worked for him, and therefore it should work for you.
I actually don't think it did work for him. Like, I don't know. I wasn't there with him, but I don't believe that Tom Brady became great because people doubted him. I think Tom Brady became great, and then he decided to dunk on all the people who doubted them. There's a perfect confluence of events that allowed him to win a couple Super Bowls before he was like really, really great. Then he also developed into being really, really great, won some more Super Bowls, prolonged his career miraculously, and continued to win Super Bowls. And now he can dunk on everybody. He was not sitting behind Drew Bledsoe like, you know what? These people said it. They drafted me in the 6th round. And everyone wrote that I shouldn't have got picked. Now let me show them. I just don't believe that.
Wow. They said
misunderstanding of his own psychology.
They said my forehead would have wrinkles at age 45. Guess what?
Science.
Alabaster.
See ya, Adam.
Wow.
That's a show.
With like a microscope. We nipped and tucked our way to the end here.
Is there a microscope strong enough to see an atom? Like an actual atom. Not like, have you ever actually seen a picture of an atom? Or you just see like that like animation of an atom?
I can barely see the word goodbye on the screen, let alone subatomic particles.